ComicBookBookBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, September 25th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next probably close to hour and a half or so to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me to kick off a new week here on Bang the Book Radio. Really looking forward to today's show. We'll have Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview. Second half of today's show, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. with our college football first look. Lots of things to talk about in terms of recapping what we saw over the weekend, and then, of course, looking ahead to what's going on this week. Speaking of that, over at bangthebook.com, we're going to have a ton of great content here throughout the week. We're rolling out some more NHL team previews from Parker Michaels here today. My college football power ratings have been posted. I like my numbers this week. I like where they're at. A lot of them opening right on or very close to the numbers that are out there in the market. So I'm very happy to say that my power ratings are getting more efficient as the season goes along. That's a very important thing to keep track of. Also posted my week four opening line report for the NFL. Looks like another interesting card here, pretty challenging card. Last week we saw a bunch of home underdogs. This week, kind of a nice split, but there are a lot of games out there with injury concerns. So I'll have to keep up with the latest on that. I'll have a President's Cup preview coming out today. NASCAR will come out later in the week. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information over there at bangthebook.com. One more thing before I bring Joe on the air, that promo code over at BSI Sportsbook still going on. Our Bang the Book radio listeners and bangthebook.com readers can use the promo code BTB and the number 25 to get a $25 free bet just for signing up over at BSI. When you make your first deposit, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. If you add some funds over at the live casino, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus over there as well. So great offer from our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. Couple of segments coming your way here today. The first one with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. Joseph, how's it going today, man?
Going well, Adam. Glad to be on. And boy, if I picked up anything from this last week in the NFL, it is hard to get a win on the road.
Really is. It was a very interesting week, to say the least. As I mentioned, lots of home dogs here. We should have had another one win outright in Detroit. At least maybe Detroit could have won outright. I don't know if they'd have been able to get another playoff there with the 8 seconds. But you know what? It was obviously the big story around the NFL is what's going on with the players and, you know, what they're doing during the anthem and all that. But, you know, this was one of the most exciting weeks in the NFL. You had a lot of close games. You had a lot of one possession games, a lot of games coming down to the wire. Furious comeback from the Giants that fell short. You know, the Lions with that buzzer beater with their aim, where they almost pulled it off. New England having to squeak by as a double digit favorite. Lots of stuff going on here in the NFL.
Most definitely. It's teams starting to figure it out. And I look at a lot of it as teams starting to rediscover their identity or just invent it on the fly. I mean, that's, it is still week three, and heck, there's 6 days of September left. So there's really a lot of football to be played, and I think that's where we get into so early these overreactions, whereas, you know, we'll hit on one team where I think they just kind of may have found their spark even in a loss.
Well, you know, we talk about it being early, but at the same time here, we got another full 16-game slate this weekend. Means all 30 of the 32 teams, Tampa Bay and Miami, of course, the exceptions, will have played a quarter of their games already. They've already played four of the 16 games. So, you know, while it does still feel like it's early, we kind of saw some of that desperation. You know, we saw a team like the New Orleans Saints didn't want to go to 0-3, made sure that they came out and took care of business in that game. You know, we saw that desperation from some of these teams. Buffalo was another one that came out, played very desperately against Denver, you know, come away with the victory there in that one. Then we saw some teams that didn't play with a whole lot of desperation. We'll touch on them here in a little bit. The Steelers, of course, being one of those. But speaking of desperation, kind of have a spot here tonight on Monday Night Football where you've got a desperate team in the Arizona Cardinals. Now, yes, they're 1-1, so they're not worried about falling to 0-3. But that one win was not a very impressive one against Indianapolis. Dallas looking to bounce back off of a bad game against the Denver Broncos. Right now out there in the marketplace, you've got the Cowboys a 2.5 or a 3-point favorite. Bovada, the very public book, showing 3.5 on Dallas at even money. So looks like we got a little bit of a sharp public split here in tonight's game.
Yeah, and it's just the Cardinals, as you mentioned, it's tough to read because they should have lost that game that they won. And just starting off with the Cowboys' look on offense here, the Cardinals' defense, they got worked by Jacoby Brissett and Jack Doyle over the middle. So I'd expect a healthy dose of Jason Witten, Terrence Williams trying to take advantage of Tyvon Branch there. And it's we talked about it last show, the changes on Arizona's defense, losing Calais Campbell at defensive end and Tony Jefferson at strong safety. I think those guys, the drop-off to their replacements, especially Campbell, is significant. Going to Frosty Rucker and Nkendiche, if he plays, whatever he's going to do, I just think that's noticeable there. So, yeah, Dallas, they're going to pound Zeke. They're going to do what they do. They may take their shots with Dez, but I see Terrence Williams. I think Cole Beasley is going to move a lot of the chains against guys. Like, y'all got respect for Carlos Dansby, and I love Haason Reddick, but covering a slippery little guy like Beasley on those drags, he runs across the field so fast, he gets on those quick crossers, and if they get that mismatch with a backer, I think that's where the Cowboys would make some hay. But really, the premium matchups here, we're looking at Chandler Jones against Tyron Smith. I mean, those are just two special athletes going mano a mano in this game. I think that's one to watch. Tyron Smith is still probably the best tackle. I mean, it depends on what scheme you want to run, what flavor of ice cream, but boy, he's right up there. And then the other one, Dez Bryant versus Patrick Peterson. I think that's going to be the whole game too, because the way the Cardinals run on defense, Peterson doesn't play a side. He's man. He'll go chase and cover all game long, and that's probably going to be the matchup. So really, that is a real treat for football fans there. But yeah, it's this Cardinals offense where they're at. The big two problems is DJ Humphrey is still out with a knee injury. Mikey Apati might play, but what level will he play? It's a tricep injury. That's going to limit him. So, yeah, no Dave Johnson. It's just play the Cardinals all season long. No, they can't run the ball. And pass protection, still an issue with Dave Johnson. You know, I keep bringing him up. That's a one great pass protecting running back right there. He can stump a defensive tackle that makes it through the fray. And, I mean, God help Carson Palmer if Tyrone Crawford makes it through unabated. He might kill him tonight. That's my biggest worry there. And then I think the Cowboys may be getting a little bit better. Orlando Scandrick's back in the lineup, and that, to me, is the biggest upgrade for Dallas. He's not, you know, the best corner in the league, but what they do in that scheme, he plays that bubble. He gets the perimeter from contained to the boundary. He really takes care of business, and it's not just coverage. He's a form tackler. Scandrick, he will light you up when he gets a chance. So I think that it's just going to be tough for the Cardinals to get points here. The only real holes there is that the other corner, if they get Nino Brown matched up on J.J. Nelson, that could be a quick six. And then Jeff Heath, the safety for Dallas, that's another beatable guy. But, yeah, I'd look for DeMarcus Lawrence. Like I mentioned, Tyrone Crawford. They could have really big days rushing the passer because John Wetzel is just not the tackle that DJ Humphrey is. He's not a starter for any team. So that's a gaping hole, I think, for Arizona that they just can't overcome, both in the passing and running games there. Wetzel's just – he's a jag.
You know, I think that the line movement and the activity that we've seen in this game is pretty surprising because a lot of times, you know, you run into situations where – the public is going to be obsessed with skill players. And for Dallas, you've got Dez Bryant. You've got, you know, Jason Witten is in the twilight of his career, but he's still a guy that can produce some matchup advantages. Obviously, there's Ezekiel Elliott. And then, of course, Dak Prescott. On the Arizona side, without David Johnson, you don't really have a whole lot. And this Arizona team is also probably going to lose the battle in the trenches in this game. Now, Dallas, only 3.8 yards per carry through the first two games. They've had some injury issues on the offensive line. Extra day here of preparation to get things together. But Jared Valdir has moved over from the left side to the right side for Arizona, and he has not played well on the right side, just doesn't look comfortable. You mentioned the Humphreys injury. Generally speaking, we tend to see, you know, sharper bettors out there look for those advantages in the trenches. And that's what I like about having you on the show here, Joe, is that you know, you pay a lot of attention to the trenches. I'm a little bit surprised that we don't see some more Dallas investment from the influential bettors, because to me, in breaking this game from an X's and O's standpoint down, it looks to me like Dallas has a big edge, probably on both sides of the ball, right there at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, exactly. Right from the inside out, it's. I think that's where this game will be won, and where Dallas is starting to develop. I mean, as I mentioned, that corner is still a problem, but they're starting to get ends that can play. DeMarcus Lawrence is coming into his own. I still think the world of Malik Collins. That's a kid. I think even when he was in high school, he's like a three-time state wrestling champ. So the strength in his hands, what they're able to do. They still have Stephen Paya, who holds the record in the combine for bench press reps. So there's a lot of power up front on the D-line for the Cowboys that, as we mentioned, those holes on the O-line for the Cardinals. And then on the other side, you know, the problem with the Cowboys is they still, I believe, miss Ronald Leary and the retirement of Doug Freeze. So you still have two pieces of that last the 2016 puzzle that was so magical with Ezekiel Elliott and this offensive line. It's still the chemistry, the cohesion is just not there yet, but the pieces are still very good. I mean, once they get the things rocking, they're just going to start popping people off the line of scrimmage. I think that's the problem with the Cowboys. It's just been so slow going to start the year, and that's just, I think, every offensive line. It's just when you replace one starter, the accountability is a question mark, the reliability, where your guard's going to be when and when they stunt, and there's just so many different things a defensive line could do. It's you really have to have an unspoken bond with those front five, and Dallas is getting there.
Well, I guess that's the question then, and this will be the last point that we make on this game, and then we'll get a pick from you on this one. But do you feel like that's something where Dallas has the guys in-house to fix this thing? Do they have the ability to be as effective running the football? I mean, probably not as effective as last year because, I mean, they were just so good, so efficient in terms of the rushing attack. Probably not going to replicate that this season just because of natural regression. But, you know, do they have the ability to step up their level of play? Are those guys there in-house for them right now?
Oh, yeah, without a question. I mean, the coaching staff, I still believe, is going to get the most of it. Frank Pollock's a heck of a coach, but the one question I have still is Lyle Collins, where he's at as right tackle. He still, in my opinion, needs to get some more strength, but I believe Chaz Green's just a powerhouse. It's just coaching it out of him. That's a guy that just has not played a ton of reps yet and heck of a player at Florida. So those are the two replacements that you're worried about, but as far as level of play, they will return to close to where they were. Maybe they won't be as effective as a rushing team, but yeah, it's just a matter of time. Just like Novocaine, you know, give it a few minutes, it'll take effect, and these Cowboys will be running the ball just as well as they were last season.
All right, so like I said, this number pretty much 2.5 across the market. You got a 3 with plus 105 on Dallas at the Greek. You got the 3.5 even money out there at Bovada, but you know, let's say the number 2.5, it's pretty much what everyone's looking at here as we're recording on Monday morning. 2.5 with some extra juice. Everyone out there minus 115 or so. Who do you like in tonight's game, Dallas or Arizona? And any thoughts on the total of 47?
Well, I'm just angry I bought down to 2.5 yesterday. I guess I could have just got it clean today, but I've already got Cowboys in pocket. I think that's the way this goes. And even though I did just start the show off saying how difficult it is to win on the road, but yeah, I think Dallas, they get the job done. But also, if I'm looking at that total at, 47, 46.5, whatever it is, I think that's doable on the over. Just looking at, as I mentioned, if there are holes in this Dallas team, it's still at secondary. The other corner is still a problem. Jeff Heath can be beat. And if you're looking for an X factor in this game, I think the Cardinals really need to break the glass and unveil the rookie, Chad Williams. I believe in this kid. I've been calling for it for a few weeks. Unleash the Ramblin' Man from Grambling is my call. He's just got great deep speed. He beat every corner he faced at the Senior Bowl during practices. This is a guy that he's just a big, hairy American winning machine. I think give him turn one of those with a touchdown or a super big gain. So I think the Cardinals have areas they could beat the Cowboys, and I think the Cowboys will have success over the middle and running the ball. It's 47, I think, is doable. I would not argue anybody taking it over there.
Well, the sportsbooks did really, really well here this weekend. They had significant wins both in college and in the NFL. But those that listened to Bang the Book Radio last week, I think you wound up doing pretty well because we were pretty on point with some of our NFL and college football analyses last week. Hopefully we can do that again here this week on the show. But let's start with a look back here, or let's go ahead and get into a look back at week three. Let's start with the NFC South, and let's start with the Carolina Panthers. They wind up losing, and it was in ugly fashion to the New Orleans Saints. Saints win 34-13. I really like New Orleans in this spot. I thought that it was a tough start to the year for New Orleans, playing an elite defense in Minnesota and elite offense in New England. You know, they're not elite really on either side of the ball. I mean, they're very, very good on offense, extremely good on offense. I don't think I would call them elite. So, you know, they moved the ball in Minnesota, but they got to the red zone, had some problems. New England just blitzed them in the first quarter last week. Then this week, you know, they get a Carolina team that's just not particularly strong on either side of the ball. Cam Newton, I don't know if it's injuries. I don't know if it's the scheme. Maybe you can shed some light here on that in a minute. But, you know, they're not great on offense. And then without Josh Norman, this defense has kind of been in a downward trend. Luke Kuechly, obviously, still very good. Same thing for Thomas Davis. But in the secondary, they haven't been what they once were. New Orleans certainly took advantage of that here. So what is the biggest problem for Carolina at this point?
I think it is Cam. I'm really starting to wonder where he's at and how healthy that shoulder is, what happened this offseason. The operation, the time off is definitely showing and the rust is evident, but they're hiding something with that scheme. I watched this game. I thought I was watching an Army game. He's lining up in the pistol. They're doing misdirection, handoff after handoff, run after run. It was Stewart, McCaffrey, you name it. A lot of checkdowns, a lot of screens. And I don't know if, that, you know, on my Twitter, I posted the next-gen stat chart for Cam Newton's day. So I encourage listeners just to check that out. Without looking it up, you can just go to the Twitter. But there's four, maybe three passes attempted over 20 yards. And against a Saints secondary that's got beatable corners, I don't understand the strategy. I don't understand why you don't take more shots. I mean, you've got huge receivers that you don't necessarily have to go deep. You could underthrow these guys on a back shoulder. Kelvin Benjamin, that's his game. Funchess, he's a big-bodied receiver. Let him take a jump ball. So there is a trust issue in Cam Newton's arms, and even the shots he took, a lot of them were overthrown. One was just in the sidelines there. The players just standing like this. This is definitely not the Cam Newton we know, and like I said, I question the play calls against a defense that has known holes there. That just is a real head scratcher. I mean, for the positives here, I love how they're using Christian McCaffrey. I think this is what we all kind of expected. It's just a little bitty Reggie Bush type of role. Curtis Samuel looked really, really fast. I mean, hopefully they're devising a little more ways to get them the ball. But just, yeah, the biggest question mark from this game is why they didn't take shots early, and Cam Newton with these picks and where he's at. I don't know how to play this or how to use this, but you can't really take unders because they're about to play the Patriots, but maybe a team total under and just, I don't know, an outright fade of the Panthers. We knew they were going to struggle without Greg Olsen, but if they're playing the Patriots, Belichick's going to take these short passes away and force Newton to go deep. And I think that's going to be a recipe for the disaster there. So, yeah, I'm very worried about the Panthers and specifically Cam Newton's shoulder. I think other defenses have to see what we're seeing, and they're really going to game plan against that and force Newton through the air, which you got to wonder if he can get it done.
Well, and that's the big thing. I mean, you look at the three best offensive players for this Carolina team, probably Jonathan Stewart, who is a very reliable running back. Christian McCaffrey, as you mentioned, you know, they're doing a great job to put the ball in his hands. 13 touches, nine catches, four carries, and 11 targets. You know, you got to get him the ball. You have to find a way to get him the ball. And it was smart to draft him and have that extra outlet for Cam, especially because he's taken far too many hits here over the last few years, you know, out there running around with the football. And the shoulder thing probably is an issue. And the other big player is Curtis Samuel that you mentioned. Very, very fast. When you look at how he was utilized at Ohio State, in that H-back role, didn't run a ton of deep routes, get him the ball in space on swing passes and things of that sort. You know, NFL defenses aren't going to miss as many open field tackles as college defenses are. They're going to be able to bottle this thing up. And, you know, that's the situation that Carolina faces right now. Kelvin Benjamin, who knows if he's going to play not just this week, but the rest of the year, because that knee injury didn't look very good. Greg Olsen's already out, so they can't stretch the middle of the field. They can't run those seam routes with him. This Carolina team is in a pretty sad state of affairs right now offensively. And I don't know, you know, if Mike Shula has the ability. You know, he's a guy that's been an offensive coordinator for a long time, been a coach for a long time, maybe a little bit too set in his ways here to get creative with this offense, which is what needs to happen. You have to be creative. You have to use a lot of different looks. When you can't throw downfield, you can't soften up the defense. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about NFL linebackers that run 4.5, 4.6, 40s. They can go sideline to sideline. You know, it's not like college where you can, you know, use Samuel and McCaffrey and find these mismatches out in space. They don't happen as much in the NFL. So for me right now, I'm not going to say that I'm going to lay the huge number with New England because they've got problems of their own. But, man, I can't back Carolina in almost any context right now with the injuries, with the square pegs that they're trying to fit into round holes.
I don't want to do an outright fade of Carolina, but, yeah, there's a yellow caution sign off limits tape around this team with a loud beep and noise. And it is unfortunate because right now the weapons that you have, I think you hit the nail on the head in perspective that they want to get McCaffrey and Samuel in space now. But even in that division, those linebackers are fast. You're going up against Lavonte David and Quan Alexander, and then the Falcons don't give you much relief, and Deion Jones and Campbell, and just they've got speed, that linebacker. So, yeah, it's even if they get creative, it's just going to be tough sledding for the boys in Carolina.
Yeah, that number right now, pretty much 8.5 across the market, Five Dimes showing a 10 as they're sort of trying to limit their exposure on the Patriots. And, of course, the Patriots in a bounce-back spot here this week, not playing well against the Texans. So, you know, we're sure to see some public investment on the Patriots this week. We'll see if we get public investment on the sharp investment on the Patriots as well with all these issues that Carolina has. One of the most interesting lines out there in the market to me here for week four, Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Pittsburgh, a 2.5-point favorite with extra juice. Line's probably going to go to 3 here sometime today or tomorrow. Baltimore coming back off the London game, played absolutely awful. And you kind of have to wonder to yourself here a little bit, do you chalk that Baltimore game up to being an outlier because it was in London, because they've never gone there before? Or is this maybe a sign of additional problems to come with Marshall Yand out of the lineup, and then, of course, the fact that they don't have much of an offense to begin with. But our focus here is going to be on the Pittsburgh Steelers, who had plenty of problems with the Chicago Bears. Bears wind up with the walk-off Jordan Howard touchdown in overtime. What are you seeing from Pittsburgh right now that concerns you?
I'm seeing an offensive line that's not as good as everyone built them up to be, and who knows what the chemistry is in the locker room with everything else going on, but I just know they came out flat. And we've all due respect to the Bears, and I've probably bored the listeners too much about what I think of Dal Loggins and the job they're doing there. And this is just a team. They out-hustled the Steelers, and the Steelers just some uncharacteristic sloppy play, turnovers, that Eli Rogers muffed punt to not kick off the game, but I mean, we're talking first quarter, that really swayed things. And then just to wrap up the first half, the Steelers actually drive the 57 yards. They look like the Steelers for half a second, blocked kick. It results in 3 points for the Bears. It's just, there were a lot of bad breaks here, but the fact that the Steelers are having so much trouble scoring on the road is alarming. And just, you know, I have some problems with their defense, but this game, this loss is so not on their defense. I mean, 17 points in regulation is nothing to be ashamed of, and really, those Bears break some big plays. This Tyreek Cohen in the open field is just deadly for any defense. That's a tough stop and a tough ask. I don't care who you are. So that is what it is. But I hate to say it, Big Ben and the offensive line letting him get sacked 3 times. That's what swayed the game. And I really think if I had to give an MVP to the Bears, it's not Jordan Howard. It's not a skill position. It's that defensive line. They really showed up. If it's Willie Young, if it's Pernell McPhee, they're all getting back in there. But surprisingly, Akeem Hicks did not get a sack in this game. I'm shocked that he should have got in there. But I think it's up front, and the Steelers really they probably got a well-needed reality check there.
Well, and you have to wonder about this team because, I mean, Le'Veon Bell missed all of camp while he was holding out. You know, and he's a guy, we talked about him last week. I know Sports Gino made reference to this point that, you know, Le'Veon Bell is a very patient runner, a guy that kind of sits behind the line, waits to pick his spot once things develop. Well, if spots aren't going to develop for him, then that's going to, you know, sort of neutralize his running ability. I mean, he's still going to be a very talented pass catcher, still going to be a guy that gets 20, 25 touches a game as well. He should. But you have to wonder about his efficiency. And for Ben Roethlisberger here, ultimately this guy's got one wide receiver to throw to in Antonio Brown. You know, Smith-Schuster is a speedster type guy, but, you know, Ben's not really known for throwing a whole lot of deep balls. It's kind of a methodical, you know, efficient, get 5-6 yards of play, march down the field, get those third and threes, move the chain, stuff like that. You know, there's not a significant deep threat here for this team. And, you know, that's one of those things where you have to have a running game to get those third and shorts. Because if you're facing third and six, third and seven, third and eight, getting bracket coverage on Brown, someone else has got to make a play. Outside of Brown and Bell, they had six catches from Smith-Schuster, Martavis Bryant, and Jesse James here in this game. So what do they do? How do they change this up?
They've got to get Martavis Bryant going. And I don't know what the answer is that. You can't force feed him the ball. I mean, they've been giving him attempts. I just don't see him out there making the plays. I mean, one pass that could have been made was a little bit overthrown, but there was a deep ball where that's Martavis' game. Go up and get it. You're the 6'3", 6'4", whatever. You have to sky up and make that play. And this another problem, the Jesse James, as good as he's played, I mean, he's played above his head, they still miss that combo that was Heath Miller. He was such a good blocking tight end. I think that's one of the, you know, biggest misses here. It's like you can give that tackle help. You can max protect and line that tight end up, and he's just as good as another offensive lineman. But James, Grimble, McDonald, none of these guys are inline powers, and that's an element they definitely miss. And also, really good point you brought up is Le'Veon Bell and his unique style. I've got a friend who's a Le'Veon Bell hater from back in the day, and his contention is that, oh, they'll get film on him. They'll find that style out, and the style won't last. It can't. The success he's having can't last. And, yeah, it's really hard to shut him up right now because it seems some of these defenses are just – if you're going to hesitate and wait, we'll hesitate and we'll all play the waiting game until the line of scrimmage is so clogged up you can't go anywhere. And, yeah, that's – I don't think it's I personally don't think he's got to change his style. That's one of his strengths. But there's definitely some defenses that are picking up on it, just his anticipation and how he likes to approach certain runs.
Well, and I think what's really interesting about this discussion here that we're having on this game is that, you know, when I was looking at this one and I actually just wrote up my Bears-Packers preview for Thursday Night Football over at bangthebook.com, I thought about this game in terms of what it means for the Bears. You know, they got their running game going. They've got a two-headed monster at running back in Howard and Cohen. And the defense with Vic Fangio looks a lot better. So I kind of looked at this game and thought to myself, okay, maybe this is a sign of how far the Bears have come. But I like that we're taking an other side approach here with a very public team in Pittsburgh and saying, you know, maybe this is a team that's kind of falling off a little bit. I mean, Roethlisberger, each of the last 3 years, his net yards per attempt have gone down. You know, there's just, like I said, there's not that deep threat to soften up opposing defenses. And it just feels like, you know, unless you can keep up a very high rate of efficiency doing what Pittsburgh has been doing for the last few years, you know, you make it a real challenge on yourself, and I kind of wonder those necessary adjustments, and like we've talked about here, it starts at the point of attack. It starts with opening holes. It starts with giving Ben time to work through his progressions. Those are all very important things that Pittsburgh just doesn't seem to have right now.
They are missing on those elements, and also it used to be the fastest player, the most dynamic player on the field in all of their games, Ben Antonio Brown. Well, in this game, unfortunately, they got matched, and at least, you know, pound for pound, I'd have to say it, Tariq Cohen, he's just as dynamic. He is a home run type hitter, and with the Bears having that element of surprise, and it's that is something the Steelers, I think, do need. They need someone else outside of Brown that has not just game-breaking speed, but that make-you-miss ability in the open field. It's it really is where the game's going today. As good as Le'Veon Bell is, as good as Ezekiel Elliott is, David Johnson, you know, these teams are just going to get two backs, a closer, a chain mover, and a pounder, and then a guy like McCaffrey, a guy like Tariq Cohen, a guy that just makes things happen in space, and he's the home run hitter, if you will. And, yeah, it's that I will have to say on the other side of this coin there, you do bring up a good point that this is a huge confidence win for the Bears. And, boy, you know, if you're a defensive coordinator trying to plan for them, you're going to be staying up pretty late nights.
All right, well, I went 4-1 in the Super Contest last week, and I fell victim to that crazy ending there in the Detroit Lions game. My final pick, I was between the Lions, Bengals, and Redskins. And, of course, in true Super Contest fashion for me, I wind up picking the wrong one and the one that loses in some sort of historic manner. But, you know, I liked the Redskins here on Sunday Night Football. I thought it was a pretty good spot for them. It was, you know, a tricky travel situation for Oakland. But I will say this, there is no way in hell I envision that Oakland would have 128 yards, have two scoring drives, one of 18 yards and one of 8 yards, and just get completely dominated in this game by the Washington Redskins. So what's going on here with the Oakland Raiders?
Well, that certainly you can't underestimate that travel spot, but the everyone's paper champs have got some holes. I think a lot of listeners already knew the secondary was still a question mark and a few garbage players there, but what you counted on and thought you could was the offensive line, and they just got walked back every play I saw. They could not find that extra blitzer. They couldn't get it assigned, and they let Derek Carr get beat up like his brother. I mean, Derek got hammered last night. Now, he made some bad throws, sure, but with Ryan Kerrigan living in the backfield and Marshall Newhouse getting beat like he stole something, that was probably the worst part of this step. Just when you think they've got this front five wrapped up, that right tackle is a problem. Preston Smith got a sack. Kerrigan got a sack. I think Jonathan Allen, the rookie, got back there. Oprah Winfrey was giving out sacks in Washington. And this is another team, I think, of much-needed dose of reality here for the Raiders, is that they better get their offensive line together, and they still can't cover the pass to save their life. I mean, the problem I'm trying to figure out here is the Redskins' offense, the unquestioned focal point of their group is Jordan Reed. That is Kirk Cousins' go-to man, and without Reed, without Rob Kelly, the Redskins just had their way with that defense, and I don't think it mattered how many points the Raiders would have scored. That would have been a shootout, and they probably would have lost it even if they had their offensive lines act together. But that was kind of a bitter loss for me, and sure didn't look at the travel spot, but that was just a face plant, I think, by the Raiders offense there.
I thought you were going to say that Oprah Winfrey was out there getting sacks, but then you said giving away sacks. I was like, okay, I guess that makes a little bit more sense. You know, and I think another thing here about the Raiders, too, is that in their first two games, they were effective running the football. And then in this game, they couldn't do anything. Like you said, the offensive line getting pushed back, Carr sacked 4 times. The offensive line only helping out with 2.5 yards per carry. Jalen Richard only 2 carries in this game, which, I mean, look, I like Marshawn Lynch. I think he's a fun player, and I think he's a good teammate to have. But also, I don't think that it's going to go particularly well for you at this stage of the game when Lynch has, you know, 3 times the carries of your next highest rusher, and that was Cordarrelle Patterson. Carr had a couple of rushes, and then Richard had 2 as well. You know, you need to get the ball to guys that can do something out there in space, because, you know, largely that's what Oakland is. I mean, if they're trying to run between the tackles to, you know, do something to set up future plays, that's one thing. But, you know, this is a team that is built, really, in my mind, to be on the outsides. Now, Jared Cook had a big game last night with 4 catches and a touchdown. He's really your primary guy, you know, out there in the tackle box. I think you need to go to the outsides here. And, you know, it just feels like the game plan wasn't great. It just feels like, you know, maybe the travel spot was something that did affect them. But also, you kind of look at a game like this, and we were looking at Oakland coming into this season and sort of expecting some regression from the Raiders. You know, they did very well in games that were outgained last year. They were plus whatever they were in the turnover battle. So you were sort of looking at them as a team that could take some steps back here this year. Is this a one-off performance, or is this a sign that, you know, maybe this is a team that could struggle over the next few weeks?
I think it calls for concern. Even before the injury, Crabtree was not getting open. Now he's got some chest injury left in the fourth quarter of that game. But looking at the rest of their schedule, I'd be really worried. I mean, they've got to go to Denver. They still play a tough Baltimore defense that if they had problems with Washington, I mean, Baltimore's going to get their act together, at least on the defensive side of the ball. And then with the week after that, it's the Chargers with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram off the edges. I'd be very worried about pass pro, and if Crabtree is injured, teams will bracket up on Cooper, and it's just going to be even tougher to get points. So, yeah, if I'm a Raiders backer, and definitely when you're playing these games, that's they've got a red flag every week until I see some signs of improvement. And definitely, say what you want about Crabtree, just his presence out there means a great deal to Cooper's production and how well they can move the ball with Carr, just because, like I said, just standing out there, that's enough. But if he's not on the field, there's just no other threat. I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson's just a glorified kick returner. And what do they have outside of that? Seth Roberts, great story, solid little player, but a Crabtree, he is not.
All right, one more team to touch on here that you saw some things from, and we've been talking about the negative for a lot of teams here. Let's go glass half full, and then let's kind of actually pour the glass half full, because this glass was pretty much empty through 2 weeks. But that's the New York Giants. You know, they weren't able to come away with this game, did score 24 points with their flurry in the fourth quarter, still wound up finding a way to lose. Did cover the number, though, so you know, that's important for some people out there that did take the Giants, but you saw some things. You saw some positives from this football team on Sunday. What were those?
Well, apologies to Giants fans, because, I mean, if I say a moral victory, they'd probably punch me in the face in person. But, signs of life. There's just at least a spark here. And I will preface this saying the Philly corners are banged up. This defense has been getting beat, so that's the reason why we were seeing some openings there in coverage. But what I always look at it, especially up front, back end, I don't care what position, is it chemistry? Are these guys communicating? And you really saw some pre-snap looks that I think they're finally seeing the same coverages. At least they're approaching the same page. Maybe at least right now they're on the same chapter for a change instead of in different complete books. Paul Perkins finally showed some signs of life, and what made me smile ear to ear is Brandon Marshall looked like an older version of himself instead of some bum off the street. I mean, that's my guy. I've been watching him since he was a rookie out of Central Florida. I've got the jerseys, no non-Denver jerseys, of course, but I'm just so happy he got his act together. Real rough start, and just looked like he wasn't even a part of the offense. Now they seem to be using him on his routes, on curls, on end runs, just little screens. That's how you can win. And when Marshall's on his game, he can break those tackles. But the biggest game changer, Odell Beckham, he doesn't have his spring yet. He didn't have his complete game because, as I've said it before, it's the stopping, the starting, those quick gear shifts that gets him open against no matter what corner he's playing. He's got that. And, I don't see him back complete, but he played 80% of the team's snaps. He was still able to get open. I don't care if he's at full capacity. Even half-pace Odell is enough. That one-handed touchdown to tie the game, that in itself should be a huge sigh of relief for not just Giants fans, but Eli, everyone on the team, I think, saw that. And that's a confidence-building play, just does that by itself. So, and then they don't tell anybody, the Giants didn't give up a sack against the Eagles. That is also another step up. But, yeah, I don't want to say it's a moral victory, Adam, but at least this is not a worthless team. Like, you can play off of this, and I think their offense might finally be whole again. They're not complete. They still can't run the ball. But, once again, we talked earlier to show, teams kind of rediscovering their identity. That's what I see happening to the Giants. So I'd say look out for them in future weeks.
Well, and looks like the market here early on in the week on the Giants side, Pinnacle opened 4.5. The number's down to 3.5. And in fact, it's showing signs of going down to 3 now. Bookmaker plus 3.5 minus 15. Pinnacle's 3.5 minus 17. So it looks like the Giants going to be down to a field goal dog here against Tampa Bay. So, you know, certainly the market taking notice a little bit here in this spot as well. But Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joe, what's going on over at Draft Bible right now?
all cranking out the reports for the College Gridiron Showcase. We're doing shows. Should have another one this Thursday. So covering the 2018 class like no other.
And, of course, you can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett, NFL Draft Bible on Twitter at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, thank you so much for your time, man. As always, we appreciate it. I'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Talk to you soon, Evan.
Great stuff there with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. All right, we go from the pros to the college side of things. We'll bring in Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our college football first look. Kyle, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, it's hard to believe we're this far into the season already. Conference time for everybody, and looking forward to talking about another week of college football.
I'll tell you what, man, I was just talking with Joe in that last segment that, you know, once week four is over, everybody except for Tampa Bay and Miami will have played a quarter of the season. Once week five is over, a third of the college football regular season will already be over. It's unbelievable. It feels like we wait forever for this thing to start, and then it's gone in the blink of an eye.
It definitely feels that way, no doubt. Feels like you're prepping for the season, getting ready, really excited, and then all at once, you know, it's half over. So definitely enjoy it while it's here.
All right, well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here as we come out of week four, head into week five. As I mentioned there during that segment with Joe, not only did the books do really well in the NFL, lots of dogs covering, books did extremely well in college football over the weekend as well. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, I know. It was an underdog weekend in general, also under weekend, you know, so that's perfect for the books. You know, that's exactly what they want. I think that, you know, it's just one of those things where from week to week there's variance, and, you know, I wouldn't read too much into one week as far as what happened, as far as underdogs or unders. I don't think there was any big, you know, weather or anything like that that really changed too much as far as the underdogs and the unders coming in there. I think that it's just, you know, one of those things that you'll see week to week. Favorites might do well, underdogs might do well, overs might do well, unders might do well, and I think it was just a little bit of that variance.
Well, what I do like here is that, you know, we talk about, and this has been a theme that we've had over the first month of football, and we can talk about it here as well, because when you get a week like this where, you know, excuse me, on the NFL side, there were some really good teams that did not play well. Green Bay didn't look good at all. They've got a lot of injury problems. New England didn't look good. We talked about Pittsburgh there in that last segment. Some very public darlings didn't look very good. And you have to wonder if confidence is shaking a little bit in some of those teams. Let's look at some on the college football side, for example, here. Oklahoma State. Everybody said Oklahoma State was unstoppable. That number closed below 10. It closed 9.5 pretty much everywhere. TCU wins that game outright. Clemson, you know, great performances here in their first few games. Looked very good against Auburn, at least defensively. Looked great against Louisville. Well, against Boston College, they did not play well at all. And, in fact, that was a 7-7 game going into the fourth quarter in Death Valley. Now, Clemson, of course, wound up winning by 27, failed to cover the 33-point spread. You know, but you have some of these very public teams not looking particularly strong here in week four. Could be some overreaction value on the board as a result.
Yeah, there could. And I think that Clemson game is a good one to point out, because Clemson opened a 5.5-point favorite there against Virginia Tech. That one's really been steamed up. Clemson now up to -7.5 there across the board, even a couple eights. I wouldn't read too much into that Clemson game. You know, everybody's going to have one of those games where, you know, it's kind of a letdown spot. They went to Louisville, played so well, and, you know, 7-7, but then they turned on the afterburners and blew away Boston College, a Boston College team that has a pretty good defense that just can't score on offense. You know, so, yeah, I'd look for overreactions, chances lay on teams that maybe people have soured on too much.
Another team that didn't look very good and actually got very lucky to escape with a victory was Penn State over Iowa. Iowa gave them everything they could handle, and then some. And, you know, we also had some situations here where there were some teams, you know, because people have asked me on Twitter, you know, is the market ever wrong? And yes, the market is wrong. I mean, San Diego State closed an underdog at Bet Online. That line closed, wow. San Diego State +1. And, you know, I mean, San Diego State won the game 28-24. It was probably a lot closer than they wanted. Awful, awful spot for San Diego State. We talked about that game quite a bit on the show last week. But you know, the market wound up being wrong there in that game. The market was also wrong on some other games throughout the day. And, I mean, that's how it goes. You know, the market isn't always going to be right. You certainly don't want to be against the market, you know, all that often. But, you know, that was one of those situations where the market was wrong on some games. Duke and North Carolina was another one. North Carolina closed as high as a 2.5-point favorite. Duke won by 10. You know, so there were some of those spots out there in the marketplace where some of those games, you know, just didn't come out the way that influential bettors had expected them to, which leads me into a listener question that we got here for this week. And, you know, we talk all the time about getting the best line or getting the best of the line that you possibly can. So we got this question on Twitter regarding figuring out line movement throughout the week, how you can predict it, what some of the things are to look for. And I know that you've got a few, you know, pretty good ways to look at that.
Yeah, I think we can break this down by time in the week. You know, early in the week, by far most important is to have a good power rating. If you have a good power rating on a game, you should be able to predict where that line is going to move. So that's why we talk about that a lot. You know, I think that is easily the best way to try to get the best number early in the week. Now, because if you're good at it, you know, you're going to get it to move toward your number more often than not. Then later in the week, you know, you get to Friday, Saturday, you just want to know who the public's going to bet. Some experience following the market and seeing who made a big splash last week and the public's going to overreact is really key here. And I think there's a great example from last weekend. Mississippi State last week, that line move on them versus Georgia was just ridiculous. Public overreaction, I mean, that's one of those ones that you can see coming. You know, I wouldn't have thought it would drop as much as it did, to be fair. But, you know, you could have known that when it was 7, there's no way it was going to stay there. Everybody was going to want to bet Mississippi State because of what they had done to LSU the week before. So that's a good way of an example of finding the best number by waiting it out. And then on the other hand, you know, with your power ratings, there's times where you want to grab it early in the week because you know it's going to move toward your number. One other thing I would point out that can cause some major line movement and something we talk about quite a bit is weather. You know, this is both on totals and on sides. Weather is something you want to try to get ahead of, but you don't want to get too far ahead of. You know, 2 to 3 days before a game, I don't think you want to go more than three days before, you know, because we all know how weather forecasts can be. You know, it's not a perfect science, so you want to make sure that, you know, it's close enough to the game that you have a fairly good handle on what might be going on. But if you see that there's going to be some massive wind in a certain game and it's Thursday afternoon and the game plays Saturday afternoon, that's a good time to look toward the under because that's definitely going to get steam later after that.
Yeah, and this is something that even I'm a little bit uncomfortable with because I am a guy that wants to see quantifiable information. But, you know, like you were talking about there a little bit, Kyle, is that a lot of times you can just get a feel for these things. If you follow the markets regularly, if you pay attention to what's going on, you know, if you understand perception and recency bias and those types of things, you can kind of look at a game and say, okay, this one's probably going to move. This is probably a game that, you know, we're going to see some sharp involvement on. This number is likely going to go down. Now, there will be times where you're wrong. I mean, last week, for example, in terms of looking at, you know, that San Diego State Air Force game, I honestly figured at some point the numbers guys were going to come back in and play San Diego State because there's no way in hell that those two teams, you know, are a 3-point difference on a neutral or 3.5 if you want to give Air Force the extra bump for playing the altitude. It's not. Those teams are not rated that way. But, you know, the buyback never came. People were just too worried about the spot for San Diego State. And, of course, that was a weird game anyway. You had a weather delay and there was a lot of strange things going on in that game to begin with. But, you know, that was one where I honestly felt like, okay, because I got San Diego State -3, I think it was -3, -15, two separate points throughout the week. And I thought, okay, this is going back up. It's probably going to close 4. I'll be happy with that. It never went back up. And in fact, it kept going down. So I wound up being 3-4 points off the number I could have gotten. Of course, it still got there. So I'm thankful for that. But, you know, a lot of times you'll look at a game and you'll be able to figure out, okay, this game is going to go this way. Sometimes it doesn't happen, but, you know, like you said, you can follow along with the markets. You can check out betting percentages and just having an awareness of, you know, what the thought processes are about these teams.
Yeah, a couple more points. The betting percentages is a good thing to look at too. There are a lot of sites you can look at that show the betting percentage for free. So, you know, you can kind of see where things are going there. And then another point is you can, if you follow the market enough, you know that certain teams are going to get steam. I'll use baseball as an example for this year. Adam would know this for sure. The Miami Marlins were just a sharp darling for a really long time. You know, for a team that hasn't won any more games than they have, you just knew that the sharp money was going to come in on Miami every single day. So you might as well just wait it out if you want the other side. The same type of thing happens in college basketball, college football, NBA, everything. You can see that certain teams just, they're going to get money every single week. So it's good to track the line movement, see who was a big line mover last week, the week before, things like that, because those can end up being predictive.
Yeah, definitely. And we have a couple of, I mean, these aren't examples that you can use regularly, obviously, but you look at North Carolina State and Florida State, you look at UCF and Maryland, you look at Miami and Toledo. You know, those were spots where you kind of assumed that money was probably going to come in against the teams that hadn't been playing. Now, Miami and Toledo, you actually saw pretty balanced action in that game for the most part, and it took Miami a long time to wake up. But money came in against Florida State. Money came in against Central Florida, which was actually a big surprise because Central Florida had been steamed very heavily early on, and I kind of expected that to be the case as we got closer to kickoff for this one, but people were scared away by the extended delay. So, you know, just knowing a feel for the teams, understanding what's going on, and then, of course, if you find a line where it looks like there's clear overreaction, and I do think that there are a few of those out there in the market this week, you can reasonably assume you know which way those are going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the overreaction is still the best way to get the best number because you can know that those overreaction spots usually are going to get, you know, the sharps are going to come in. That's what the sharpest bettors are trying to do is look for overreactions in the market. And that's no matter what sport we're talking about. So if you want to try to look for those spots every single week or every single day if it's in a different sport, that's certainly the way to go as far as getting the best. I think that's where you start. Like I said, you know, having a good set of power ratings helps a lot. And then just knowing how the market works is a real big plus.
Yeah, it definitely is. And again, I mean, understand, you know, if you got a home dog situation, that's probably something that, you know, the sharp guys are going to look to back. Maybe you get some public buyback. Maybe you don't. I have to ask you about this, actually. I have to sidetrack the show a little bit and ask you because I, for the life of me, I don't understand this. So I'm looking at the odds screen here. Somebody destroyed Texas Tech today. Like, Texas Tech got hammered. It's down to 8.5 or 9 out there in the market. Now, there's actually an 8 sitting out there at Bet Online. Now, this is one of those where I expected the market to come in on Oklahoma State. My numbers of this game, 15.5. Did I miss an injury? Is there something going on that happened with this game?
I mean, I think 15.5 is probably a little bit too high. My number is bigger than what it is now as well. But, you know, maybe Texas Tech's better than we thought they were. I mean, they beat a good, decent Houston team there last week. I don't know what's going on as far as this line move. I certainly don't understand it being this low. It seems like it would be a decent bounce-back spot for Oklahoma State. Texas Tech, you know, their defense has been somewhat better this year, but I mean, do you really want to count on Texas Tech's defense against Oklahoma State? I mean, I certainly don't.
Well, for any of our listeners out there listening live, if there is something that's come across the wire that I missed here, which is certainly a possibility during the show, please feel free to let me know because this is that truly doesn't make sense to me. And I would be surprised, you know, I won't be surprised to see this number go up towards 10 and possibly climb back over 10 here as we get some more of the numbers guys in there. There's no way in hell I'm trusting this Texas Tech defense. Oklahoma State finally played a defense, and that's what happened. That wasn't a surprise. This week, they don't play a defense again. Now, maybe they give up some points, but I don't know. All right, anyway, let's get into the quick hitters here. We'll talk about some stats and trends and injury news and things of that sort coming out of week 4. So what do you got on the list here?
Well, first up, I'm going to give some injury notes here. Maryland's Kasim Hill, quarterback, is doubtful for this week against Minnesota. Hill was playing really well, and the drop-off from him to the backup is really massive. I had the Maryland and UCF over last week, and as soon as Hill got hurt, they had no chance. Maryland couldn't do anything on offense with the backup Bortenschlager or something like that. Anyways, he's not good.
Sounds like a
big drop off. It does. It sounds like a good alcohol. Kasim Hill is a good player. They need him in the lineup for sure. So that's one to keep an eye on. And this Maryland team, you know, in general, it's certainly a lot better than they had been. But you got to temper your expectations without Hill in the lineup. Another one I wanted to point out was North Carolina's injury report. There's 20 people on the injury report this week. Larry Fedora's team's falling apart. I think Larry Fedora is overrated as a coach at this point. I'm going to be interested to see what happens with them going forward. But 20 people on the injury report in September, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. That's one of those ones where I saw the BetOnline opener at 6.5. My number is 7.5. And I looked at it and I thought, I should do this because it's around a key number. I didn't. Rest of the market opens 9.5 or 10. So, you know, that'll be one to watch here because, like you said, that injury report, very, very significant. And, you know, this is something that I think it's a good time to stop and take a minute here on this is that when it comes to the NFL, everybody knows everything about the injury report. When it comes to college football, you got to do some digging. You have to have, you know, one of those Twitter lists of accounts to follow or something like that, or, you know, actively go out there and seek out local newspaper game previews or things of that sort, because, you know, that's really the only way that you're going to get a lot of injury information unless it's somebody that's a really significant household name.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point. You know, that's something I do a lot of, you know, week by week in college football. I really do a lot of digging, looking at beat writers. You know, you have a list of people that you want to follow up and certain, you know, newspapers that you look up for the small teams. I think that really is something that's underrated by most people because, like you say, you know, the injury report, everybody knows everything about what's going on in the NFL. College football, that's definitely not the case. And you can find some good information that's not really widely known. So that's definitely something important to do. UMass's Andrew Ford, questionable for the game here against Ohio. Ford's been playing decent. UMass is not good to start with. And then the other thing is their star tight end, Adam Brenneman's also questionable. To me, this game's unbettable without knowing the status of those two.
Yeah, I mean, I think if somebody out there pops some kind of line in Ohio, it might be worth taking a look at it. But that being said, I mean, UMass the last 3 weeks, they lost by 10 to Old Dominion, 8 to Temple, only lost by 4 to Tennessee, and that's probably more of an indication of just how bad Tennessee is at this point. But, I mean, you're talking about Andrew Ford. This is a guy that is probably worth, what, I would say 4, maybe 5 points to the number for UMass. I mean, he's got a 7-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, 64% completion percentage. They have no running game at all. They rush for 2.9 yards per carry. Ford's what, 4, 5, 6 point adjustment probably?
Yeah, I was going to say 5 points. I mean, because they have no running game, you have to adjust a little bit more than you would. And as we've talked about before, with a team like this, you don't have somebody really good waiting in the wings. You know, this is not a Bama or Ohio State or USC or something like that. So that's something to always keep in mind. So I think that UMass would be in a lot of trouble without him playing. So keep an eye on that status for sure. Tyler Huntley, questionable for Utah. You know, watched a lot of that game against Arizona last week, and they need him. They need him in that lineup pretty badly. Utah was really sloppy in that game. Arizona should have won the game if you look at the stats, the box score. Huntley gives them that extra dimension on offense that they really need.
Yeah, he does. And Utah's a team that I've gotten a chance to watch and a team that I've upgraded in my power ratings as a result of how well Huntley has run that offense. I mean, like we talked about, Taylor, the new offensive coordinator from Eastern Washington, needs a dual threat guy. They're playing with a little bit more tempo this year. Huntley's been a good fit. So, you know, if they don't have Huntley, you know, in any of their next few games, that's a huge loss for them. I mean, that's a loss where even though he's a first-year starter, you want to adjust a little bit more aggressively in your power ratings just because he's been a good fit in a new offense. Now, Troy Williams has been around the program, but not necessarily running that offense. So, you know, that's a definite an interesting situation there to be sure.
A couple of box scores I want to point out here real quickly. The first one, Alabama outgained Vanderbilt 677 yards to 78. I mean, just think about that for a minute. That's unbelievable. I had the under in that game. In my write-up, I talked about the fact that I didn't know if Vanderbilt could score, so I was going to take the under. That was the wrong way of looking at it, obviously. I mean, I should have taken Alabama minus the point. It's easy to say afterwards, but, you know, such a total of 43, and you're assuming one team, you know, can't score more than one touchdown. You have to like the under at least some. Bama made a statement in that game in a big way. You know, it's just something to keep in mind going forward that Bama's offense is very capable of putting up a big number. You know, with Hurts at quarterback, he's excellent. You know, he's a better quarterback than they've usually had in the past. And we know how good their defense is. So Bama's just a scary good team. Like I said, you know, something to keep in your mind moving forward. And something that I'm going to try to remember here going forward is even on those low totals, if a Bama game has a low total, even if you think they're going to shut out the other team, you got to be careful with those really low totals. Penn State and Iowa, I did want to say that even though it kind of seems like Penn State didn't play that well, Penn State had 579 yards to Iowa's 273. It's kind of amazing if you think about it. They had 15 points until the final play of the game. With, you know, 575 yards of offense. So that was a misleading final there, and Penn State had lost. It had been pretty amazing, but it seems like Iowa has ways of doing that there at Kinnick Stadium, especially in those night games.
I'm trying to figure out what my favorite stat is from this Alabama-Vanderbilt game. Is it the fact that Alabama outgained them by 599 yards? Is it the fact that Alabama had as many first downs as Vanderbilt had passing yards? Or is it the fact that Alabama had almost as many first downs as Vanderbilt had rushing yards? It was 40 to 38. Alabama had 38 first downs. Vanderbilt had three. Or is it the fact that Alabama had the ball for 42 minutes and 55 seconds of a 60-minute game? I don't know, but all of those numbers are remarkably impressive. Oh, and by the way, this is something I want to point out here. Now, the number isn't an overreaction anymore. But the bet online opener for the Vanderbilt Florida game got as high as 12, and that's a game that's going to have a total of probably like 40. That looked like an overreaction to me. Now that it's down to 10.5, it may still be a little bit high. But I mean, I guess when you get beaten that badly, you know, there has to be some kind of reaction taken.
Yeah, that one's a hard one for me because, like you said, I think the total is probably going to be something like 40, 41. You always want to lean toward the underdog when you have a total like that. But Vanderbilt, you know, how do they respond after something like that? 38 first downs to three. That's probably my favorite stat from that. 38 to three on first downs. You just almost never see something like that. Now, a couple things that I wanted to point out as far as conference play. I know you said in the notes leading up to this show, you know, conference play starting here in earnest. Dug up some stats on this. Conference play the last 10 years, I was trying to look at underdog versus favorite. In the last 10 years, the underdog is 2,880 and 2,876 against the spread. So almost exactly 50-50. No big edge to be had by looking at dogs or favorites there in conference play. One thing I will point out that has been pretty interesting here the last 3 years, the road teams, they're 806 and 686, 54% against the spread in conference play. Now, this goes against conventional wisdom that home field advantage is worth more in conference play. And I think that really probably speaks to something even larger, that most people are probably overrating how much home field advantage is worth.
That's a really excellent point and something that I'll carry through here throughout the show. Throughout the week. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, really, my rule of thumb in college is I pretty much give everybody 3 points of home field advantage because you're talking about, you know, traveling parties of kids that are 18 to 23 years old. You know, they're going to different places, you know, that type of thing. So as a general rule, that's what I go with. But, you know, I would assume that, you know, because it's a very crude system that I use, it's not as accurate as it certainly could be. And, you know, like we talked about, I think in the past on some of these shows here, a lot of these kids that are going to these Division I FBS schools play high school games in big stadiums, or they play showcase games, especially in the, you know, for the really premier teams. They play showcase games. They travel across the country in high school, you know, to play those games that are on ESPN and all that. It's just, it's a different kind of atmosphere, a different kind of environment now where a lot of times these kids aren't overwhelmed by the stadiums that they're playing in or by the fan bases. And maybe another thing about it too is that technology has gotten so much better from a communication standpoint that even when you're playing in a very loud, very raucous venue, you know, communication is a little bit easier than it used to be.
Yeah, I think it is easier than it used to be. And I think the point about the high school, you know, going to big games, things like that, I think that's a good point as well, because, you know, there's a lot of really big high school games, and high school football's huge in a lot of the country. You can get some really good environments there. Some of these kids, you know, are not scared by that type of environment. They actually like going into that type of environment, being the underdog or being the team that everybody's cheering against. You know, some guys just get up for things like that. And which is pretty cool. And it's a sign of a change from what it used to be. And I think it's just something to keep in mind going forward. And I wanted to say, as far as totals, unders are 51.3% in the last 10 years in conference play. Unders have definitely done better in conference play than non-conference play. But here's a really huge key and something we harp on constantly. Conference play unders, where the average win during the game is 9 miles per hour or higher, 55% in the last 10 years. Win makes a huge, huge difference. Total of 53 or higher with that same amount of wind, 9 miles per hour or greater, 56.5% unders. So look for those games that you've got a decent total, you know, in the 50s or even higher. Can you get some wind in that game, especially with teams who are, you know, passing teams that's going to affect more, and you can get some good value on unders.
And that's a big deal here. As we get deeper into the conference play season, you know, you get into late October, you start getting into November, you get some of those bad weather games. You know, you get cold rain and wind and snow and all that type of thing. So that certainly makes a whole lot of sense. Any other quick hitters, or should we get into some game breakdowns here?
Yeah, one last quick hitter, and that's just Jim Moore Jr. sucks.
That guy is so bad, man. Like, seriously, he's so lucky that he got – I mean, UCLA kind of recruits itself. I mean, who doesn't – you know, what high school kid doesn't want to go play in L.A.? So, you know, he got Josh Rosen, and kudos to him for that. And, you know, there are obviously some other interesting things about going to UCLA if you're a, you know, a 18-year-old male athlete. But, man, is that dude a bad coach. Like, at some point you have to do something if you're UCLA, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's certainly not that they don't get good enough recruits. You know, you just look at last game. Stanford was running the ball every single play with Bryce Love. I mean, you knew what was coming every time. UCLA has good recruits on defense. I mean, they should be a lot better than they are against the run. They can't stop the run. They've proven that multiple times. I mean, they should be really thankful for Texas A&M choking that one game away, or UCLA would really be looking bad right now.
Let me ask you one other thing about this game. Maybe it's a hot take, maybe it's not. Is Bryce Love better than Christian McCaffrey?
Oh, man, I wouldn't say better than Christian McCaffrey right now, but, I mean, Bryce Love is really good, really good. You know, Bryce Love has that explosiveness that McCaffrey did have. I mean, I think he has that same explosiveness. I like to see him prove it for a little bit longer to say he's as good as McCaffrey, but I really like Bryce Love. I think Stanford, you know, running the football is going to be very good going forward throughout the course of the season, as long as that offensive line stays healthy, because Love running behind a good offensive line, it's a recipe for success.
All right, let's get into some of these game breakdowns here. Three of the four games that we're going to go in-depth on will be Thursday and Friday games. So we'll have the standalone Thursday game between Texas and Iowa State, a couple games Friday, one game Saturday, pick six, free pick, and so on. Along the way here, we'll try to get as much of this information in as possible without going too long on the show here. Texas and Iowa State, we're actually seeing some involvement and some investment here in the marketplace. This is a number that's been moving around this morning, with Iowa State now catching 5.5 at home. Some shops have gone up to 6. So it looks like, as of now, the sharp side is Texas in this game.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to take Texas laying this many points in this spot. I think Iowa State's certainly an improved team. Texas obviously has improved as well. But I think Iowa State has an underrated home field advantage when it comes to this type of game. I mean, it's a standalone Thursday night game. This is a big game for Iowa State. Obviously, Texas, it's a big game for them as well. But I think that Campbell's a good coach. I think Iowa State can move the football here. My number is a little bit smaller than what this is now. You know, my lean here is the home underdog, especially if I could get 7 points. So I'm going to wait and see what happens with this one. Texas, you know, both of these teams had a bye week last week. I think Texas is going to benefit in the market from people remembering that game against USC. So it'll be interesting to see where this line goes.
It'll be very interesting. And, you know, I mean, my number on this game is a little bit lower. It's actually, I made an adjustment to Texas and I made an adjustment to Iowa State a little bit. So I've got this game down around a field goal, and that probably is a little bit light, but there are a couple of things that are really attractive to me about this spot for Iowa State. One, like you mentioned, is that, you know, this is a pretty good home field advantage for a Thursday night game. You know, this is a school that really does support its athletics. I mean, the basketball team has one of the best home court advantages in the country. You know, now that the football team is a little bit better, Matt Campbell has pushed, you know, some more excitement and interest into the program. You know, I think that they should have a really good crowd environment for this game, but it's the bye week that I like because, you know, I've been talking a little bit with Brad Powers and we've kind of been discussing this a little bit on the show here. How good of a head coach is Tom Herman? I mean, Tom Herman was a very good offensive coordinator, you know, walked into a good situation in Houston with some playmakers. As those guys got exposed a little bit, Houston kind of fell off. Now, part of me wants to give him a pass because, you know, it was clear that he was the guy for the Texas job. Seemed like he wasn't fully invested. Seemed like his players weren't fully invested as well. Now you run into a situation where both coaches on extra prep time, I feel like that's an advantage to Matt Campbell here.
You know, I think the jury's out on how good Tom Herman is as a head coach. Clearly, he was a really good offensive coordinator. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, like you said, I think Campbell's a good coach. I think with this extra time, it helps a home team like this, you know, especially with Texas coming off a game where they almost beat USC, had their chances to beat USC. It's hard to know, you know, how they come out of a game like that. You know, I remember Tom Herman's quotes afterwards saying, you know, there are no moral victories, but, you know, we were pretty happy with, you know, the way we played and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see how Texas comes out for this game. Yeah, like you, I mean, I think the jury's still out a little bit as far as how good of a head coach Tom Herman is. We're going to find out a lot about that, though, throughout the course of this season.
All right, let's go to Friday here. Let's head on down to Wallace Wade Stadium in Durham. Miami, Florida takes on Duke. Duke with another nice win last week. Market was against them. Market maybe not buying into David Cutcliffe's program. They wind up winning that rivalry game there in Chapel Hill against the Tar Heels. Now they take on a Miami team that, you know, got off to a little bit of a slow start against Toledo. Toledo is a very good MAC school. One of the things I talked about on the show last week is that Toledo wasn't going to beat themselves, so they were going to make Miami go out and beat them. Hurricanes wound up playing very well in the second half, did a good job of taking advantage and taking control of that game. Now they go on the road. You know, they've got a regular week of practice at home, head up to North Carolina to take on Duke. Duke's catching 4.5 or 5 out there in the market.
I was hoping Duke would be catching a bigger number than this. My lean is Duke in this game. This is a rematch of that ridiculous game from 2 years ago in Durham. The kick return that shouldn't have been as the clock expired. Everybody should remember that game. I know Duke remembers that game. Cutcliffe is a tremendous coach, really, really good coach. You know, you could argue that he is one of the most underrated coaches in the country, especially when it comes to, you know, being a sports better. You know, he's a good ATS coach for sure. He gets the most out of his team. Obviously, they don't get the same kind of recruits that Miami does. I kind of like Duke in this one. This one's really close to my number, so I don't see any huge lean as far as, you know, value on Duke. But at the same time, I think it's a good spot for Duke. You know, if you're looking at a situational spot, you know, Miami had that break. They beat Toledo. They still don't have the same amount of experience so far this year that Duke does. So I think that could be considered a negative. And then obviously Duke with tons of motivation from the way they lost a couple of years ago in Durham. So like I said, my lean here is Duke. I don't think that this is a great value as far as a line, and I see it's being bet down from 5 to 4.5 right now. So it seems like some sharps here taking Duke here this morning, but I want to see what happens with this line. You know, I think this will be an interesting one. Miami's a more public team for sure. I think there would be a decent amount of Sharp involvement on Duke if the number gets bigger, though.
I have this one 6.5, and it opened 6 at Pinnacle, so I was pretty happy with where I, you know, had this number sitting. But this isn't a normal game, like you said. I mean, for one thing, it is a short week for Miami. For another thing, you know, they're back out on the road again. They've spent a ton of time traveling and moving practices around and all this type of thing for the Hurricanes. So if this was a regular spot and this number was sitting Miami 4.5, I'd be inclined to take a look at it because of what my power ratings say. But this is why it's so important to add context to your power ratings, is that this is just a bad spot for Miami now, because you're taking on a Duke team that's growing in confidence. They've got a sophomore quarterback in Daniel Jones that's getting better. He's progressively getting better. And I think what we kind of saw is that, you know, people sort of looked at that Northwestern game and went, okay, maybe Northwestern's not all that good. Then looked at the Baylor game and said, well, maybe Duke's not all that good. Then looked at this North Carolina game and in the lead up to this one said, I'm not all that convinced about Duke. And then they go out and win this game on the road. And, you know, now we're seeing people kind of come back in. The betting market is very, very fickle. And I think with a team like Duke that was expected to be middle of the pack ACC, but now they're off to this 4-0 start. They played really well. Seems like the market kind of likes them here.
Yeah, I think that's right. And like you said, you know, Duke has proven themselves now on multiple occasions. Maybe that win against Northwestern wasn't as big of a fluke as it seemed at the time, because maybe Duke's just a pretty good team. And, you know, the market's been looking for reasons to not like Duke, and maybe Duke's just better than everybody thought.
All right, now this is one of my favorite lines of the week, and this one from a power rating standpoint would be a play for me. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. Southern Cal and Washington State. Trojans going up to Pullman. 4-point favorites here in this one. Five Dimes actually the first book to take a chance and hang a 3.5 out there. What do you think about this matchup?
My lean here is USC, so I'm curious to see what your lean is. I think USC has not really played very well the last couple of weeks. I think that USC's upside is much higher than Washington State's. The thing I will say that makes me hesitate a lot in this game, this should be a really good home field advantage for Washington State. And it's a Friday night game, 10:30. Certainly should be a really good atmosphere. Luke Falk's a really good fit for this system. I say that every single time we talk about Washington State, I know, but it's definitely true. He's a really good fit for Leach's system. I think USC's upside is just a lot higher than Washington State. I feel like USC is due for one of those spots here soon where, you know, they show us how good they are. Darnold hasn't been as good as many people thought he would be so far this year. Still think his upside is tremendous. I think this Washington State defense is okay, but not good enough to stop USC on a consistent basis. Having said that, I obviously think Washington State will score plenty of points here too. I think this will be a pretty high total. My lean here is USC.
Yeah, from a power rating standpoint, I'm looking at USC here as well in this spot. And I think a big reason for it is I think that this secondary is much better than this defensive front for the Trojans. And Washington State, you know, while they try to mix the run in, really, it's just a cosmetic thing to try and give some balance there. You know, I don't necessarily believe that there's a whole lot to Washington State's running game. So if you're USC, you can sit back. You know they're going to throw the football. And to me, this sort of feels like one of those spots where USC is getting a little bit disrespected. You know, they played a close game against Western Michigan, much closer than the final score would indicate. Stanford, you know, that was a game where Sam Darnold just kind of took over. Texas, bad spot, very bad spot coming out of that Stanford game. And Texas has a lot of talent. We know that. Cal last week, I think Cal's just a better team than people give them credit for. So people aren't as impressed with the body of work for USC, but given the spots they've been in, given the teams they've played, I'm pretty impressed with what they've done so far this year. Washington State, so much. Montana State, okay. Should have lost to Boise State. They were trailing by 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter of that game. Oregon State's not good. We already know that. Nevada's a team that seems like you can't rate low enough in your power ratings given their line this week against Fresno State. So I'm not impressed with anything the Cougars have done to this point. I think this is the spot where they get tested. We saw Oklahoma State get tested in a little bit different of a spot last week. They felt totally flat. I think that could be a situation here for Washington State where they run into a team that can beat them athletically, that can cover what they do offensively. And I think USC wins this game comfortably, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it looks like so far 62% of the bets are on Washington State in this one. So that kind of goes to point out what you just said there. People are kind of low on USC right now based on what they've done the last couple weeks. And I think it would be a mistake to overreact to that. I see some -3.5 showing up in multiple books now, Chris, at -3.5, -105. So maybe it's possible we get a USC -3 here. If we get a USC -3 here, I will have to take USC as road favorite. You know, there's just too much of a talent gap here. Washington State clearly capable of winning a game like this. But if USC plays well, they're too good for Washington State.
Yeah, I mean, I won't be surprised if Washington State wins this game because Pullman is a tough place to go. And, I mean, this is a Friday night game. You're going to have a very good atmosphere there for this one. But I just think from an X's and O's standpoint, from a talent standpoint, you know, USC has the talent to win out here. And I think that, you know, is what we – I think that's what we're going to end up seeing. But, again, like you said, if Washington State wins, it doesn't surprise me because they have that – not a gimmicky offense necessarily, but – you know, that's an offense that can be tough to defend, and, you know, it provides a lot of opportunity for Washington State to score points. Now, I also don't think they're going to keep USC from scoring points, so this will be a total I'm interested to see later on in the day here, but I just think USC, you know, sets up well in a spot like this, and certainly better than some of the other, you know, Pac-12 teams that may go up to Pullman this year and possibly be on upset alert a little bit. All right, I've got to talk about this game. 3:30 game on Saturday. Game 147-148, Florida State and Wake Forest. Florida State still a 7.5-point favorite. This is a number that actually got all the way up to 10 from the Bet Online opener when the rest of the market opened, came back down to the 7.5. Not a good look for Florida State last week. I know they hadn't played a lot, but they had a lot of time to get James Blackman ready, and just didn't look all that comfortable.
No, you know, I watched a decent amount of that game. I had NC State in that one of my better plays of the weekend. You know, Florida State has a real problem on the offensive line. Now, I know NC State has a good defensive front, probably top five in the country. But Blackman had no chance back there. I really don't think he played bad, considering, you know, what kind of pressure he was under. Just constantly very, very quick pressure from NC State in that game. Blackman had to do a lot with his feet just to stay alive. I think Florida State has a lot of talent on their team. I mean, they have way, way more talent than does Wake Forest. But Florida State has a lot of question marks for me to be wanting to lay 7.5 points on the road. Having said that, this is kind of an interesting spot for both teams because, you know, Florida State lost last week against NC State. So obviously they should be plenty motivated. You got Wake Forest coming in here. They were really fortunate to win that game against Appalachian State. That's something you and I talked about there yesterday. Wake Forest was very fortunate to win that game. They should have lost. You know, I think Wake Forest is a good team under Dave Clawson. I like him as a coach. We've talked about that before. I don't know if I give him a coaching advantage, though, because obviously I think Jimbo Fisher is a really good coach. And Jimbo Fisher's team coming off a loss, typically, I would like to look at Florida State. But like I said, I have a lot of question marks about this offensive line for Florida State. And, you know, I don't know. Wake Forest has that slow it down tempo, a lot of low scoring games. You hate to lay too many points against them. This is one that I'm not very interested in betting this game. It's one I'm interested in seeing what happens, but I don't see a lot of value here.
I'm going to have a Wake Forest ticket for this game. In fact, I actually already do. I played the 7.5 because my number is 5.5. So I was kind of expecting this number to move down a little bit. Of course, it moved up at BetOnline and then reopened everywhere else right at the number that I grabbed. And a couple of things I like about Wake Forest in this spot. For one thing, you know, they play a style that can give Florida State fits. I mean, they will slow this game down. They play very well in the defensive front. You just mentioned all the offensive line issues for Florida State. Also, for Wake Forest, you know, a lot of people are going to look at that game against Appalachian State and maybe mark them down a couple pegs. And look, they got outgained by 150 yards, so I get it. But they gave up an 84-yard touchdown pass, so that was a big chunk of the yardage gap. And it was the first time Wake Forest was really tested. They went on the road against a team that had this game circled, highlighted in, you know, boldface type, probably 24-point font. This was the game that Appalachian State wanted. And they almost got it. But Wake Forest went in there, found a way to win, blocked a couple of kicks, blocked a PAT, and a possible game-winning field goal there at the end. So they went out there and did the little things that they needed to win. And while the final score and the box score doesn't look good for Wake Forest, for a team that's learning how to win, for a team that's trying to change its culture around, to escape with that game is a big boost for them heading into this game against Florida State, I think. So the Seminoles, you know, I think they're in a little bit of a tricky spot here. Plus, I'll take the 7.5 in a game that should have a pretty low total.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of those points. You know, I think this total should probably be somewhere in the mid-40s. So, you know, 7.5 points in the home dog, you know, as a general handicapping theory, I'm fine with that.
All right, let's get into our pick six segment here. Six games, rapid-fire fashion. Tons of opportunities here to possibly look at in this segment here. But let's start with Friday night, one of the games that we didn't talk about, BYU and Utah State. Huge rivalry game here. Utah State hung 61 on San Jose State in a horrible spot for them. But they went out there and just dominated a Spartans team that obviously looks like it's one of the worst in FBS this season. But BYU hasn't looked good. You know, perception very low on the Cougars. Quarterback change now with Tanner Mangum hurt. A lot going on here in this Friday night game with BYU favored by 3 with extra juice on the road.
I'm going to hesitantly take BYU in this one. This will not be a game I bet. I think BYU is a lot better in the trenches than is Utah State, but I've been wrong on BYU here before this year. I took them against Wisconsin. That was a bad pick. I'm not going to take this game, but if I had to, I'd take BYU and lay the 3.
It's such a tough spot. I mean, my number is 2.5 on this game, so I don't really have anything one way or another on it. But it's such a fascinating game to look at and talk about because this is a big rivalry spot for Utah State. And they've got a vulnerable BYU team coming to town. It kind of makes me wonder, you know, how this game could actually wind up playing out. My lean would slightly be to Utah State if I can get the 3.5, which there are some of those out there, but it's not a strong pick by any means. All right, let's go to Saturday. Northwestern getting 14.5 on the road in Camp Randall against Wisconsin.
I have to take Northwestern with that many points. I like Wisconsin. I'm high on Wisconsin, but that's a lot of points for a Northwestern team that I think has a high upside. Northwestern has played Wisconsin tough sometimes here in the past as well, and I think that this Northwestern team can run the football enough with Jackson, can stop the run decent enough to give them a game, so I'll take the 14.5 points.
I will, too. My number is 13.5 here. So, again, not a ton of margin, but you got that key number of 14 there. This is one of those where I think you've got the perception bias. Northwestern did not play well against Nevada in week one, got blown out by Duke, bounced back against Bowling Green, but Bowling Green, you know, obviously isn't very good. Wisconsin's had no problems in any of their three games, but they've only played Utah State, Florida Atlantic, who they actually, I guess, did have problems with, and Florida Atlantic, of course, dealing with the hurricane and all that, and then blew out BYU, which, you know, BYU has issues. This feels like, to me, Wisconsin's getting a little bit too much respect for what they've done, and Northwestern is just getting disrespect. Like, people had a high perception of Northwestern coming into the year. I don't think they've necessarily done anything to change it too much, but this line feels like they have. So I do like Northwestern in this spot, at least a slight lean there in that regard. How about Syracuse taking on North Carolina State? We just talked about the Wolfpack possible letdown spot here this week, laying 13 against the Orange.
I'm going to take North Carolina State for the purposes of this segment. I'm not going to bet this game. I don't trust Syracuse. I mean, they've been really inconsistent this year. Their offense has even not been what I thought it would be. And I certainly don't trust their defense. So this isn't a good spot for NC State, so I'm not going to be laying the points, but I don't want to take Syracuse here. I'll take NC State.
No, I can't blame you. I mean, my number's right on 13, so I don't really have a strong power ratings opinion on this one. But I do think that, you know, when you're NC State and you've had so many close calls like they've had, you know, they've had chances to knock teams off or they've, you know, or they have pulled off the upsets. You know, I just feel like this is one of those where you kind of wonder, you know, okay, can they get back up to play Syracuse? Can they get up and play this team that's going to want to push the tempo, that's going to want to run as many plays as possible? The back door could be very open for Syracuse here in this spot, I would have to say. Moving on down the card a little bit here, let's go to this one between Iowa and Michigan State. Michigan State's now a 3.5-point favorite. Now, they took money against Notre Dame, lost by 20. Iowa, of course, you know, got beaten in the box score by Penn State, but could have beaten Penn State. They were one play away from doing so. Lots going on with this game.
Yeah, this is a really tough game for me. Again, one that I don't have a strong lean on. Hopefully we'll find one that I have a stronger lean on for the last three. But I'm going to take Iowa in this game. I don't think it's a great spot for them, obviously. I don't trust Michigan State laying that many points. I mean, I know 3.5 is not a lot of points, but to me, Michigan State's a team that still has a lot of flaws. Their offense is not one that I want to back to score very many points. I think this would be a low-scoring game. I'll take Iowa here in this one.
I'm going to take Michigan State in this one. Now, my number is 3, so I don't have a really strong opinion on it. But for Iowa here, you know, they've got some injuries on offense. Akram Wadley's been banged up a little bit. James Butler's not playing. Last week felt like one of those rallying point types of games for Iowa, and I don't know if they can bring that same emotion to East Lansing. And you know, for Michigan State, I mean, yeah, they lost to Notre Dame, and that's a big rivalry game for them that they play pretty much annually. But with where they're at right now as a program, they need every Big Ten win that they can get. So I think that they are fully invested, fully focused for this game, and I think that does give them a little bit of an edge here in this one. All right, let's talk about Marshall and Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a 4.5-point favorite here in this one.
Okay, I do have a lean on this one. I'll pick Marshall here. I like Marshall this year. You know, I've been high on them the whole season, have a season win total ticket over 5 for them. I think Marshall's catching too many points here. Cincinnati still has quite a few issues. I think this Marshall defense has a lot of talent, you know, a lot of transfers that came in that have really upgraded this team. Marshall had that one year where they played really poorly last year, and I think they're in that bounce-back spot this season. So I do like Marshall plus the points here.
Yeah, I like Marshall in this spot, too. I mean, my number is 4, so I'm not that far off of the number, but Marshall's coming off of a bye, and Cincinnati is coming off of playing Navy. And when you come off of playing a triple option team where, you know, your defensive linemen are getting cut blocked every play and, you know, you're on the field a ton, not an ideal situation when you go into the next week's game. I think there's some carryover there. Maybe Marshall in the first half just to kind of save yourself a little bit that way. But I do think that there is an angle to be played when you look at coming off of facing an option team. All right, one more game to look at here. Let's go ahead and talk about the big one between Clemson and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech now a 7.5-point favorite, and 8 has popped out there. A 7.5-point underdog, and 8 has popped out there as well. You know, for Clemson, I mean, a tough start to the year. You know, they've played some really significant games early on already. Sleptwalked through 3 quarters of that game last week against Boston College. If they do that this week, they're going to get beat. But do you feel like they're going to be ready to go?
Yeah, I'm going to take Clemson here. Widespread here in the range as far as the line right now. Chris has -7, -115, and then there are some 8s. So definitely shop around. That's something we talk about here a lot. It's good to have multiple books. I'll take Clemson. I don't want to lay more than 7, really. If I had to, I would as far as a lean. But certainly wouldn't play it as a premium selection for me as anything more than 7. I think Clemson's just a lot better than Virginia Tech. I think Virginia Tech leans on their defense quite a bit, and Virginia Tech's defense is not near as good as Clemson's defense. This is one of those spots, too, where, I mean, Virginia Tech has a good defensive coordinator for sure, but I think Clemson's defensive coordinator is even better, and this is one of those rare spots where Virginia Tech has a disadvantage at that spot, and I think Clemson just has a lot more talent than does Virginia Tech. Clemson's proven themselves on the road already this year. I'll take Clemson here.
I thought this one was real interesting. The BetOnline opener came out 7, and then money came in on Virginia Tech and drove it to 5.5. And I said, okay, I've got to take that. So I took Clemson in that spot at 5.5. Now, if I can grab a 7, and there are a couple of those out there, you know, that's something I would look to do because Virginia Tech here, yeah, they're 4-0. You know, Josh Jackson has put up some numbers, but they've played one team. They played West Virginia in week one. They gave up 592 yards in that game. It was kind of a crazy, real interesting. It was that, you know, that games on Sunday and Monday in week one were kind of insane. And that was one of those ones that fell under that umbrella. But since then, Delaware, East Carolina, who, again, you can't set your power rating low enough on them, and Old Dominion. So Virginia Tech hasn't played anybody since week one. And when they did, they gave up almost 600 yards. I can't back a team like that in this spot. So I would have to look Clemson here. In this one, and my number on this game is actually 8, so now it's getting up there closer to my number. But, all right, Kyle, I know we didn't have a whole lot in the pick 6 segment. Do you have an exclusive free pick for our show listeners?
I do, and I wanted to point out that the last couple weeks with the free plays, 2 weeks ago, Tulane plus the points was a tough loser. Last week, West Virginia minus the points was a lucky winner. So it's one of those spots where it's good to look at the thing afterwards and say, you know, sometimes you win one that you shouldn't have won. Sometimes you lose one you shouldn't have lost. So it's not always, you know, clear cut on whether you were right or not or whether it was a good selection or not. But anyways, West Virginia was a fortunate win there last week. This week, I'm going to take Akron against Bowling Green. You know, you look at what Bowling Green's done so far this year. Bowling Green killed by Michigan State 35-10. No big surprise there. Bowling Green lost at home to South Dakota, lost to Northwestern 49-7, and then last week lost 24-13 against Middle Tennessee, which doesn't really sound that bad until you realize that Middle Tennessee's two best players did play in that game, Stockstill and Richie James. I think Bowling Green's a mess right now, a complete mess. I think Akron is a team that should be able to run the ball in this one. Akron has more talent than does Bowling Green. Warren Ball gives them a good running back. He used to be at Ohio State. I think Akron's the more talented team here. I think this line is definitely a good value here on Akron.
I have a feeling this is probably going to be one of those that shows up in your misleading final scores, because that Middle Tennessee-Bowling Green game, Middle Tennessee outgained Bowling Green 533-284, but through three interceptions, they're -3 in turnover margin, so you know, that's how you let a team hang around. So I'm not surprised to see you looking to fade Bowling Green. And, you know, it's kind of amazing. I don't know, maybe we're moving lines in real time here, but that number just went from Bowling Green -1 to Bowling Green +2, like in the blink of an eye out there on the odds screen.
Wow, well, that kind of sucks. But what do you do? I mean, I still like it at -2. I would have liked it better at the other number, so it'd be nice if people would hold off a little bit so listeners could get down on it. But, I still like Akron, three or less. I like Akron. I think that Bowling Green, just like I said, a complete mess right now, switching quarterbacks, can't stop anybody on defense. Akron also played pretty well last week there against Troy. That was a tricky spot for both teams. And, you know, 22-17 loss at Troy, I think that's a pretty good showing from Akron.
Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over at the website right now?
A lot going on at the website. Got some free pick previews going up. Teamed up with a guy there that is a sharp guy there. Lives in Vegas, has worked at a lot of different sports books. You know, just a good opportunity to get kind of some inside information there from a guy who has been around Vegas for a long time, teamed up with him. So check out the free picks there at huntersportspicks.com. Also, sign up for the newsletter there at the site. Four straight winners on those free picks, 53-23 in the last 76 free picks sent out. Have to say, you know, I've said this before, I'm not going to keep winning at that rate. It's nice to keep winning those free picks. You know, I know people are really appreciative of the free picks winning the way they have. I can't keep winning at that rate. The thing that is nice about those free picks is sometimes I can give out things like, you know, team total overs, team total unders, first half plays, things like that, or teasers in the NFL, things that I don't give out as premium plays, but I do find good value in.
And you can follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. Kyle Hunter, thank you so much, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
There you go. That'll wrap it up for our Monday show here on Bang the Book Radio. I know I got a listener question from at MinorStrong69, which is a nice Twitter handle. We'll talk about that one with Sports Cheetah here as we record that segment tonight for tomorrow. Speaking of that, Sports Cheetah will be on tomorrow's show with our Hunting for Winners segment. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll hear from Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Thursday, Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. And then the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. So that's how we'll wrap it up this week on Bang the Book Radio. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.